Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
Where knights of the round table, we dance whenever we're able. We do routines, to call a scene, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rhyme, but our quiet on sing able. We're off the mad in Camelot, we sing from the die of Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sam, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how do you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
Oh, didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, the... So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing.
Paul Harvey.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and a carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, children, what's that sound?
His name is Dobry, and most people would see him as a scruffy old man. When I heard his story, I learned something important about judging people by their appearance. This old homeless man can show you what it's like to be a hero. He doesn't have much, but he possesses compassion that is more valuable than any pile of gold. when you see what the 99-year-old does every day, you'll realize that superheroes are real. They just aren't who you think they are. And here's the proof. See this old man? Here's why he's one of the best people in the world. This is 99-year-old Dobry Dobrev, a man who lost most of his hearing in the Second World War. He spent decades traveling 25 kilometers by foot every day, decked in his homemade clothes and leather shoes, from his village to the city of Sofia, Bulgaria, where he spends the day begging for money. Strangely enough, Dobrev isn't begging for himself. He manages to live with an 80 euros pension, roughly 100 US dollars a month. All the money that he has collected over the years, an estimated 40,000 euros, have been donated by him to orphanages unable to pay their bills. He doesn't keep a cent of the money he receives. Everything is for the orphanages. Some call him the Saint of Belovo, his place of birth. This year, he will be 100 years old. As one might expect, he's cherished by everybody. They call him Diado Dobry, Grandpa Dobry, and he represents the good that can be done in the most selfless way possible. So, if you're in need of a role model, here's one. Just by being a little bit like him, the world will be a much better place. He could have used the money for his own selfish reason. He didn't have to spend his days on the streets. But he does, just so he can give all of his money to children without families. Thank you, Dobry, for everything you've done.
Listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. So, played a little podcast on here. Somebody shared a video with me about a 99-year-old man that was homeless and goes back to that whole thing about not judging a book by its cover. And you look at this individual, and I've seen many cases of it in my life where people look at people, they look down on them. Well, this particular individual, the story goes that he was out there collecting money. And he wasn't collecting it for himself, he was collecting it for others. He went around and helped out homeless children. Hey, Raymond, could you mute your mic for a second? Thanks, brother. Anyway, so what I wanted to talk about today was there's a lot of good people in this world. There's a lot of good places left in this world. As crazy as things may appear out there, you know, mainstream media and even in the alternative media where doom and gloom seems to set the stage that the whole world is just so messed up and there ain't nothing good about it. Well, I'd like to change that up a bit. You know, I was on vacation here for this last week, and I was out and about, and me and my wife were a long ways from home. And if you knew me personally, you'd understand that I don't really travel very much. I don't really like to get out there into the big world, so to speak. But my wife and I, we made this journey clear down to Michigan, and we got really far away, and ended up with some car problems. Of course, that's kind of stressful when you're that far away from home, and then you you break down out there in the middle of Nowheresville. We ended up in a town called Manistee, Michigan. And of course, we'd already been traveling around through parts of Michigan, and you know, was having a good time seeing the sights and all that kind of stuff, and we were on to another destination, and suddenly we started smelling something going wrong with the car. Well, it turned out the air compressor pump on the car was burning up. So if you know anything about auto mechanics, you know that those air compressor pumps, if they lock up, they will basically burn your serpentine belt off, and then you lose your cooling system and your alternator all in one shot. So it was a serious issue. We was going to have to get this thing taken care of. And ironically enough, you know, a lot of people, they like to call things coincidences, but I like to call them divine intervention, because the way that this story plays out is just amazing to me. And the fact that we met a couple good friends, I call them now, a couple wonderful people that really went above and beyond and out of their way to help us out. We stopped off at the gas station, and it was raining outside, kind of checked out the car and finally realized what was going on, and so we started looking around for auto parts store to see if we could find, you know, something nearby. I knew what I needed. I knew the part that I needed in order to try to resolve this, to at least get us back home and stuff, and onto our final destination before we went home. And so we type in the information in the GPS system, and the doggone thing took us all the way around in a great big circle, right back to the same exact spot where we first GPSed our destination for a auto parts place. And crazy as it sounds, I looked right across the street because I'm like, the GPS lady must be insane. And there, right there sat, right from where we broke down, the exact auto parts store that we were looking for. And so we pulled up in there, and I go in and I explain to this young man named Seth McLaughlin. It's family owned business, Brian and Seth, at Brian's Auto Parts and Service. And I start to explain to this man what's wrong with my car, and trying to explain to him, because I already had in mind what it was that I needed to resolve this issue. And the young man turned around, walked over on the shelf, and right there in front of me, he picked up the exact part that I needed. And he said he was 99% sure that that's the right part. And even though the part was mislabeled and had the wrong numbers on it, and he checked it up, and he couldn't find that part anywhere, he noticed that there was a Ford emblem on there, and that he was sure that that was the right part. Well, we talked about pricing and all kinds of other stuff, and he was researching it up, and we was going to try to put on a used air compressor pump to get us by, and so we can get back to where we were going. And turns out they didn't have the pump we needed in their inventory there. But we're back to the same part again. Now it was they were going to take pull the pump off, and then they were going to try to see if this part would match up. And what a miracle. It matched up perfectly. And like I said, a lot of people like to pass that off as coincidence, but I'm going to hold firm to divine intervention, because there's another part to that story about that part. They didn't make that part for our specific car. And so if we had went to an average auto parts store, they wouldn't have been able to find that. It's essentially what they call a bypass pulley for your air conditioner. And that allows you to be able to still run your belt without having to have the air conditioner pump on there. And so while they were working on this car, and keep in mind it's still raining outside and all that kind of stuff, we started in, my wife was having a good long conversation with with Brian, and I was kind of talking to Seth while he was working on the car a little bit, and they even took us, when the rain died down a bit, took us on a tour of their salvage yard, seen a whole bunch of old, basically classic style cars and all kinds of stuff. Either way, the short story of the long story is, just by chance, you just show up when your car breaks down in the right place at the right time and meet the right people, and they have the exact part that you need. Now, I feel like, you know, there was a higher power following us throughout that journey, because there's some things could have went a whole lot worse than what they did. You know, I got so many stories about my trip down to Michigan and back that it'd probably be a show in itself just to tell you about all the adventures that we were on. But if you're ever down in Manistee, Michigan, and you need some sort of work done on your vehicle, stop by and say hi to Brian and his son Seth. Really awesome people. And they stayed an hour over when they were supposed to close an hour prior to the time that they finally finished working on our vehicle, just to get us back on the road. There's not too many people in the world that I've met that are willing to, you know, go over and above and beyond like that. So I was pretty impressed with them. So if you're ever down there in Manistee, Michigan, you go say hi to those folks if you need some help with your car. And, you know, throughout our journey, we met a few rude people, but we met a whole lot more good people in this world. There are a lot of places that we visited, old landmarks and stuff, And all in all, it was just a really wonderful journey. So, on the way back, we, my wife kind of had a little bit too much soda pop to drink or whatever, some coffee, cappuccino, whatever she was drinking at the time, and so we had to find an emergency stop, and man, we showed up, we seen this exit for Blackwater, Missouri, and when we got down into this town, it didn't look like there was going to be any place for, you know, her to be able to use the restroom and all that kind of stuff. But when we got down into this town, it's something amazing. It's you just have to see this town. This town is like stepping back into history. And every single person that we met in that town were so incredibly polite. And they wanted us to, I guess, feel like we were at home. I mean, it's like a family kind of deal. And the lady showed my wife where the restroom was, and something really cool also in there, this small town, was just too much stuff that was really cool down there. But they got a little free museum in there that has phones way back in the early 1900s. They have switchboards, and it's just so cool to see how the phone system in this world, you know, over here in the States was back in them days. Man, I'm stumbling all over myself. It's just a really amazing place, and I'm thinking I'm gonna probably go back and visit this place at some point. They're talking about putting a little ice cream shop in there, and they got an old hotel that's been restored, and you just have to stand in this town to believe what it is I'm saying. Blackwater, Missouri was founded in 1887, and here it is the year 2017, and some wonderful people who you know, wanted to preserve a little bit of, you know, historical, you know, just awesomeness. They got a Facebook link. I posted the link to their website on there, Blackwater, Missouri. It's .weebly.com, and I posted their Facebook link on there. If you get a chance to go over and say hi, there's a little shop that we ended up stopping in that was open while we were down there. That's another thing too. Most small towns are closed whenever you get past a certain point in time. But it's a little shop called Rural Route Rustic. And Katie, I hope I pronounced this right, Vogel and Kim Green run this little shop. If you get an opportunity to go down there, tell them thanks for being nice to us when we came through there. It was just so amazing. And so anyway, I got Raymond on here. Looks like Thomas jumped in. There's a lot, folks, there's a lot of terrible stuff going on in this world, but there are some amazing people that if you're out and about and you get an opportunity to just experience just a fraction of what we experienced on this trip that we were on, I think you'll enjoy that. So, Raymond, you was telling me about your vacation that you went on.
Oh, my God, I had the most fantastic vacation of my life. I mean, I went to the Netherlands to visit Germaine Fishwick and his family. I went mainly to help him. You remember he made a video of a solenoid motor that he had made, and he mentioned that his dream or his ambition was to make a solenoid motor powerful enough to power his bicycle. So, me being as old as I am and carefree and footloose and fancy free, I just go over there and see if I could help him somehow. So I went over. It was mainly a business trip for me to help the man, you know, get started. Oh my God, I could not believe it, Shazam. The entire country, not just his little town he lives in, but the entire country is so clean, so neat, so perfect. I mean, it's beautiful. It's like artwork come to life.
Well, speaking of art,
it's one plastic bag on the side of the road, and it was gone 24 hours later. I mean, And the people are so friendly, it's unbelievable. Okay, I get off the airplane. I have no euros. That's with their money over there. It used to be guilders, but now it's euros. I had none of their money. The people that were supposed to pick me up, they were at one end of the airport. I was at the other. I had no way of calling them because my cell phone wouldn't work over there in that country. So I'm standing here, and my legs don't work as good as they used to. So it folded up like a sardine in that plane for 9 hours. I could hardly walk. Lady walks up to me and says, are you okay? And I said, yeah, I'm fine. I said, I just can't locate the people, and I don't know where I am. You know, I know I'm in the Netherlands someplace. She said, well, can you call them? I said, yeah, I got the number, but I said, I don't see a phone. She said, well, there's a payphone right there. Well, you know, in the United States, the payphone, that's like finding gold in a chicken's mouth. Huh. But anyway, I said, well, I don't have any money to call them. She said, well, here, reached in the purse and pulled out a handful of coins. At the time, I had no idea how much money it was. Later on, I had the coins in my hand, and Jermaine, when I finally got with him, he counted. The woman handed me 7 euros. I mean, Shazia, think about it. Yeah. A euro is $1.10. This woman handed me $7.70, didn't even know who I was. She just knew I was in trouble. And I needed help. She didn't have the time to physically help me herself, but she gave me money to where I could find help. You know? I mean, now, is that friendly or not?
Well, that's pretty awesome, man. You know?
So help me. I swear, the way I was stumbling around with my cane, couldn't hardly walk even with my cane because my legs were so stiffened up. I had 5 people stop to see if they could help me within less than 15 minutes. I mean, it's unreal, totally unbelievable. Every yard throughout the entire country, it's not just the one little town Jermaine lives in, but the entire country, man. I mean, every house, I don't care how old it is, it looks like it was just built last week. You know, old-fashioned style, but when that well taken care of, every yard is full of rows that are neatly trimmed, flowers growing everywhere. Those people love flowers. I mean, they love life. You know, it's amazing. They're well known worldwide for the windmills and the wooden shoes and the red neckerchief that the working men wear around their neck. And his parents took me to this one place. It's like a tourist area where they show all the stuff in the history of the country and so forth. And that was absolutely amazing. We spent the whole entire day there. I mean, they got windmills galore that are actually working. I mean, like one windmill was built to cut lumber out of trees. It's still working today, cutting lumber.
Hey, you want to hear something ironic?
Huh?
You want to hear something ironic?
Yeah, go ahead.
While we were on our trip, one of the sites that we ended up, it was... I think it's one. I want to say Dutchland.
Uh-huh.
Well, anyway, they have a little factory in there that they make wooden shoes, and maybe it was Holland. I can't remember. I'm going to look it up through one of our brochures, but it was basically the same thing you were just talking about the windmills and the wooden shoes and the culture and stuff like that. And I was down there, I was talking to him about Jermaine, about the picture that he drew, and I was saying, you know, people in Holland must be a lot of artists in that town.
Oh, there is. It's unbelievable. In fact, every one of Jermaine's family, everyone has a certain talent. I mean, his grandfather is unbelievable. The man used to carve out dolls about 5 or 6 inches tall.
Yeah.
I mean, intricate detail. I mean, even down to eyelashes. I mean, he's got his daughter, which is Jermaine's mother, has got a set of an old man and old woman that he carved back when he was younger. And he carved many of them and sold them to help, you know, support his family. But, he did it mainly out of love. He just loved doing it. But then he would do them and people would like them and buy them from him, you know. But he even made the clothes they wear. His father, Jermaine's great grandfather, was a tailor. And as a young man, he was fascinated by the fact that his father could take just plain textile materials and cut it and sew it together and make a beautiful suit for a man, or a unbelievable beautiful dress for a woman. And he was amazed at that, so he kind of like watched his father and learned how to do it. And so he would physically make the clothes for his dolls.
Even
buttons, he would carve the buttons out and drill little tiny holes in them and sew them in place. I mean, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. His Jermaine's father is a construction worker. He does all kinds of jobs. I mean, the man, he makes, I don't know how to say it, he makes the average construction worker look like a dummy. I'm serious. The man can do daggone near anything when it comes to construction.
Hey, do you know if an artist named Picasso was from Holland?
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm thinking that's the right name. My brain ain't working too much. I got a little bit of jet lag, but there was a statue that was carved out like you were talking about in this theme park. I believe a Picasso painting. Uh-huh. And that's why I was wondering that whether or not he was... I'll have to Google that up and see where Picasso was actually from, but there were a bunch of statues that were carved out down there. One of them was a guy fishing, and he caught an old wooden shoe.
Oh, we don't know.
I'll have to. I got pictures of all of it. When I get them loaded up on the computer, I'll have to share them with Jermaine and see what he thinks about them. It was really an interesting deal. So, yeah. So you had a good time over there, right?
Oh, golly, it was fantastic. I'm going to warn people from the United States, if you go over there in the summertime, take some warm clothes with you. I'm serious, man. It is amazing. I mean, I was over there from the, actually from the 12th of July till the 5th of August. And, I mean, there were only 2 or 3 days that I didn't have to wear a windbreaker or sweaters or T-shirts, I mean, sweatshirt or something, because it's cool over there. Really cool. They don't have hot days. If it hits 80 or 82 degrees, those people, I mean, they feel like they're dying from the heat. It's unbelievable. The nights get down to, I mean, well, it's unusual, but in the summertime, in August, July and August, the nights can actually eventually get down to like 45 and 48 degrees. Man. Most of the time, it gets down to about 55 or 60. I mean, but you put on a light jacket and go outside, you know, at night, and everything's cool, everything's fine. But those people, shame on this. I was out at, it was like 5:30 in the morning, the sun was coming up. I'm wrapped all up, I've got on my windbreaker, and Jermaine's father, John Fishwick, anyway, I've got on his winter jacket, right? I'm shivering, sitting there drinking my coffee. John walks out. I mean, nothing but a pair of Bermuda shorts on. That's it. No shoes, no sandals, no nothing. Sits in the chair and runs back and says, daggone, says, isn't this a beautiful morning? I said, are you crazy? I'm freezing to death. And he just laughed like crazy. But they're used to it, you know? So if you go over to the Netherlands, folks, and to visit, you're going to see the most beautiful country you've ever been in your life. You're going to meet some of the most friendly people you've ever seen or met. And just take a jacket with you, so you'll be comfortable and can enjoy it. I mean, man, it is utterly fantastic. The whole place, I mean, unbelievable. We drove down the interstate for an hour and a half. He lives in a little place called Oysterbeek, and it's about an hour and a half drive from it to Amsterdam to the airport. And so help me, no trash on the side of the highway. It's like interstate here. And no trash nowhere. Unbelievable. Totally unbelievable. I mean, you drive down the United States and down the interstate, and so heavy, you're going to see a plastic bag, you're going to see a water bottle, or you're going to see a beer can or a soda pop can. You're going to see something on the side of the road. You don't in the Netherlands. No. Cleanest, neatest place I've ever been, friendliest place I've ever been, and like you said, everybody has some little niche that they're really good at, a little hobby or something. It's either it's carving or making wooden shoes or painting or drawing or welding. I mean, something. Everybody. They're so talented. It's unbelievable.
Well, I googled up Picasso. It looks like he spent most of his time in France, but for some reason, the statue of him ended up in the theme park, so I don't know, maybe he visited or something. But anyway, listen to you, it sounds like you had a really good time over there, and I spent a lot of time up and down by the Great Lakes out there in Michigan, and just met a lot of wonderful people.
Yeah.
You know, there's it's just amazing, even in the state that this world can find itself in, that it has found itself in, that you're going to find people where you least expect it, find awesome places. These folks down there in Blackwater, Missouri, that are preserving that bit of history, you know, that to me is amazing. There's a lot. I've actually feel like I want to go on a tour of all the different historical places just in my area alone, just to see, because it's kind of really amazing to step back. It's almost like stepping through time into that different era, the way that they have preserved these towns and stuff.
Right.
And so, I think that more communities, if they have an opportunity to preserve a bit of history like that, there's so much history around there. I mean, just in my state alone, I'm sure that it'd probably take you months to go through all the historical sites.
You know, you just hit on a really fine point there. I don't care where you are, if your town that you live in, no matter how small or how large it is, it's got history. And if you want to travel all over the world and visit this place and that place, why not start with your own hometown?
Yeah.
I mean, think about that. I mean, you know, I guarantee you, Kingsville, Missouri, where you live, I guarantee you that there's some unbelievably interesting history.
Oh, yeah. This town that I'm in, it's not actually in the same spot that it was back during the Civil War, because the original town, I believe, got destroyed. And so they rebuilt it just a little bit, I think, further north than it was originally.
A little bit closer to the railroad track, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But either way, on your journey through all these different deals, you'd be surprised at some of the people that you come across that have a love and a passion for history and people and you know, they're willing to share with you and help you out when you're in a jam and stuff. You know, like the story about you at the airport, you know, that's amazing. You're in a completely different country, and nobody knows who you are or what you're all about or anything like that, but yet they took the time to help you out just because they seen that you had a need, you know. And to me, there ain't no greater gift than the love of other people to help each other out, man. That's all I got to say. You know, these folks out there in Michigan that Brian and his son Seth, really awesome people to talk to. They had a lot of things, Brian's dad had a lot of things in common that my wife, the way that she grew up on a farm and stuff like that, and they live out in the country as well. And just really amazing people to talk with.
Yeah.
And they did a good job for us. And gave us a fair price.
People need to start helping one another, and all, but they already do.
Yeah.
If we talk about any bad people there were, Hitler, Genghis Khan, Mussolini, blah, 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 blah. But think about all the good people there are. For every one bad person, there's 10,000 good ones. Yeah.
Well, it seems like the negativity of this world overshadows all the good things of this world.
Exactly.
And that's a shame, you know.
It really is, because there is so much good out there. It's unbelievable.
But now, you said earlier that you came back with a whole different outlook and a view on life. And
yep.
I kind of feel like that to some extent myself.
Hey, you know, guess what? I said everybody's got a little niche, a little hobby or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, I fish with Jermaine's dad. His thing is rebuilding old farm equipment, especially tractors. And he really loves the Fordson tractor, okay? And, I mean, so he loves to take old things and fix them up to where they run like new. Well, when I left, I gave him a hug and kiss on the cheek and told him, I said, thank you, because you took this old man and repaired him. I mean, when I got there, I could barely walk with my cane. I almost had to get a damn walker. But anyway, by the time I got done with him running me around here, looking at this, looking at that, and we had two tractor shows, and of course he put a couple of his tractors in each show, and three of them in each show actually. And, I was running around with the camera, taking pictures of this and that, and I mean, by the time the 3 weeks was up, I was exercising, and my legs got stronger, I was walking without a cane.
Cool.
Not a walker. Not a cane. I mean, man, it was wild. And so, I mean, he fixed my legs. They're not perfect yet, but he got me started. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He got started to where now I want to exercise. I want to get my legs back in shape again. So, the old man, I mean, the guy, he loves taking old things and fixing them. Not just tractors, but people too. You know what I mean? Wow. Yeah. I mean, he is a dynamite guy. As friendly as can be. Everybody, when you go to a tractor show, there's nobody at the tractor show that doesn't know him personally.
Wow.
The man, amazing. He is amazing.
Well,
the whole thing, actually, golly, I enjoyed my trip there. I mean, the third day I was there, I said something about, can I go over in the kitchen and fix me a sandwich? And John looked at me and said, do what? He said, your family. This is your home. You do whatever the hell you want. Golly, David. I mean, that's the kind of people they are. I mean, yeah. they're something else.
Well, there's a lot of amazing people in this world. There's people out there that, you know, risk their own lives to save other people. And, you know, I'm thinking it's about time for all the medias of the world to start putting these people out in front to show people that the world ain't as bad as everybody thinks it is.
Exactly.
You know, we got our share of doom and gloomers out there, man. I'm telling you, this everything's so terrible, and I'm sitting here, I'm experiencing things. You know, these folks out there in Michigan, you know, they could have been like some of the other folks I've ran into in my life as far as automobile repair shops. They'll take you to the cleaners, man. This guy wasn't trying to take nobody to the cleaners. He was trying to be upfront and honest and doing the best he could with what he had to work with. And, you know, he had to earn a living too. But we got out of there for a fair price, and we made a couple friends on the way out. And I told him, I said, you know what, when I get on my radio show, I'm going to tell people about you. And I'm hoping that they, if they ever come through this neighborhood, that they stop in and say hi. Because they were just really awesome people, man.
Yeah.
And we met a lot of people like that along the way. You know, people that want to help you get directions or whatever. Because the GPS that we had, I don't know, maybe the GPS people were just messing with us, but they were driving us in all kinds of circles and craziness.
I just remembered a funny situation that happened, you know, when we went to that tourist area.
Yeah.
I mean, just happened to run across a Spanish-speaking family. And I got to talking to them in Spanish, and come to find out, they were from Dallas, in the Netherlands on holiday.
Wow.
So, talking to them for about 4 or 5 minutes there, and then finally, you know, we got ready to leave and go to another area, and they left. And John looked at me and says, you know, all that language you were talking, that sounds like rubbish to me. And, you know, and I said, well, now you know exactly what it sounds like to me when you talk to your friends in Dutch. And we both just laughed right crazy. Oh, man. But we had a good time. I mean, a really good time.
I wish I could remember the name of that theme park that we were in Michigan. It's Dutch Land, I think. But they sell all kinds of neat souvenirs and stuff like that and have some rides. I mean, they got a really fair price and just really nice people that work there and stuff. And it's all Dutch themed. But, you know, while we were out there looking at all the art, and I'm amazed, and I was talking to some of the ladies out there, I was telling them about Jermaine, you know, that he had drew this picture for me, and I said, you know, everybody in Holland must be artists, artists of some sort, because the craftsmanship.
Yeah, artists, heck. And their art can go from anything from drawing on up to building.
Yeah, I was looking at some, tile work and metal work and all kinds of stuff. And
yes.
They take pride in what it is that they do. know?
Yes, they do. They really, really do.
It's really an amazing culture. And
very.
So, you know, my shout out to them too. You know, it's just, I don't know what this experience of this, you know, trip down there to Michigan and back. You know, it was a long drive, and we met a lot of stuff and had some adventures on the way, and met some people that just impressed us, man. It was really cool.
It really is.
I'm sure you feel the same way about your trip to Holland. So, I don't know, man. Somehow or another, I guess I'm just going to have to squeeze in a whole lot of good stories out here on the Knights of the Round Table. I'm just going to have to start hunting them up. So if you're out there, you're listening, and you're in the chat room or something like that, throw some stories about just people and places. You know, this one about this 99-year-old man, they say begging for money, but I hate that terminology. It just sounds terrible. You know, to me, it's not begging when somebody's in need, and especially the way that he was doing it. All the money that he collected, he used for somebody else's needs.
Right.
And, you know, I've seen other stories out there. You know, if you get out there, you really want to look for them, you'll find other stories. There were stories of people that were homeless that would go out and they would, you know, ask for donations and stuff, and then they'd take that money instead of going somewhere and squandering it. They'd go to a grocery store, buy a bunch of food, and take it down to all the other homeless people.
Right.
You know, there's places in this world where greed has overtaken so bad that, you know, they actually want to arrest people for feeding the homeless. You know, and to me, that is a big atrocity. You know, there's a lot of people out there in this world that don't get to live in the luxuries that some of us have, you know, the blessings of being able to enjoy. I wish that we could level that playing field for everybody. If there was a way to do it, I know there's a way to do it, but it's not a one-man job. You know, it's something that we as a society are going to have to decide that it's more important to take care of one another than, you know, to fill up our bank accounts or build our stairways to heaven or whatever. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. I see exactly what you're saying.
You know, you can't take none of this stuff with you, and that's the ironic thing about it. Don't matter how fancy your house is or how much money you got in your pocket, it matters the quality of your life and the quality of what you can do to help this world to be better and go in a better direction than what we've seen. You know, sometimes I just don't understand the way that people in this world think. You know, some of the rude things that people do to each other or say to each other, or even the terrible atrocities, you know, governments fighting with other countries and, you know, all over either money or he said or she said or supposed whatever dilemma. But it's never the man up top sending your children, or it's never the man up top going to war. It's the man up top sending your children to war against other people's children. You know, that to me is ridiculousness. It's worse than that, you know. There's so many words that I could say that, you know, you just, how do you define something that is so, it's just terrible, man. You know, there's a, look at just in that town where you went with Jermaine, you know, so much wonderful stuff that people do and can do for each other that would literally go to waste during a war, you know?
Yep.
Would you rather live by a bunch of people that hated each other, or would you rather live by a bunch of people that cared enough to love each other?
Right.
Anyway, we met waitresses and waiters and all kinds of just people in the service industry that were really nice, and people want to sit down, they want to know about you, and you want to know about them, and they tell stories about their life, and you tell stories about yours, and it's just amazing.
Yep.
So, folks, there are good people in this world. There's a whole lot more good people in this world than there are bad. That's the way I look at it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. A lot more good than there are bad. Man, I mean, it's ironic. You and I both went on vacation about the same time.
And had the same experience.
That's amazing.
Yeah, while you're over there visiting Germaine, I'm over here in a theme park of Holland, looking about the Dutch history and stuff like that, and seeing wooden shoes and talking to them about my friend over in Holland that is an artist, and the things that he does, and about building tractors and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And so maybe you and I needed that break. Maybe we needed to see, because I've become because of certain circumstances in my life, I've become sort of jaded against the world, thinking that, you know, it was just so much worse than what it really is.
You know, the last tractor show, I went to two tractor shows with John and Germaine, and the first one was really, really neat. It was nowhere near as big as the second one. But anyway, the second show was 2 days. We took half a day Friday setting up, getting the tractors on display and so forth. And the actual show was Saturday and Sunday. I had no idea that there were so many people all over Europe that came to the tractor show that didn't even live on a farm, but they wanted to see these old tractors, you know?
Yeah.
And way, because I was from the United States, and the only one there from the United States, they let me, they have a grand finale parade of the old tractors. Huh. Not everybody in the parade, but those that want to be in can be in it and show off their tractors and so forth. They put me on the oldest tractor in the show, and leading off the parade. Can you believe that?
Wow. That's pretty neat. That's pretty neat.
You really get to take a total stranger and let him lead the parade. You know, I mean, dang, you know, on the oldest tractor of an antique tractor show. I mean, man, it was wild. It was something else.
Well, you're sort of an antique yourself, so.
Yeah. Well, that's why I left on the 12th to go for the 15th was my birthday. Yeah. And I wanted to celebrate my birthday with Germaine and his family in the Netherlands, and I did. And we had a great birthday. Great birthday. So, I mean, the whole entire trip was very pleasant, unbelievably happy. And there wasn't a dull moment or a bad moment in the entire trip. It was something else.
I think what I like the most about Germaine and his dad restoring those old tractors is that, first off, they must be artists, because they recognize that some of these vehicles, the tractors and cars that were made back in the old days, are just works of art. I mean, people took pride in what they made back then, you know?
Yes, they did. Yes, they did.
And that they preserve these older tractors like that, it's a bit of history that, because of their preservation, we'll give it a longer lifespan that maybe down the road somebody else may have to, you know, clean it up a little bit and keep it going. You know, it stinks to think that we'd actually forget where we came from.
Right.
You know, there's some things in history that weren't good, but there were a lot of things in history that were good, and there were a lot of good people. This little town that I went down there, they're working really hard to preserve that little town. And so if people that happen to be in Missouri and actually get a chance to stop down there at Blackwater and just see it, the town founded in 1887. And they called it Blackwater according to the brochure about, or not the brochure, the website on there, that because of the way that the mud It's pretty black down there by the river, you know, the Missouri River down there. But, you know, however it got its name, it's pretty neat that if you don't know this place is there, it's easy to pass by. We only went there by accident because Beverly had drank too much coffee and needed to make emergency stop. And they were open, and they were polite. They were awesome to people. They even have a little, it's kind of a theme. It's an old jail down there. I was looking inside that, the old, imagine a jail cell from 1800s.
Oh, man, yeah.
Oh, it's pretty neat. But the phones, I was really intrigued by that. There's even actually an old payphone inside there as well. But they had when I'm sitting here talking about a phone museum, that may not seem interesting to most, but since I'm into alternative energy and I like the way that some of these old things used to work and the wireless telegraph and stuff like that, and the way that they used to use old switchboards to, you know, plug this cord into that slot, connect this person to that person kind of thing. It's just really cool, man.
Yes, it is. It is. And the thing is, to have been born prior, just after that age, it interests me even more because, I mean, to think about how far technology had come from the early 1900s to when I was born, and now to have lived as long as I have and seen the technology that has developed from the time I was born to the present day, it's totally unbelievable to me.
Sometime if you ever happen to be down in this area, we might just have to take an hour or 45 minute drive up to this place, and I'll show you the town personally. I mean, it's just cool.
I would love it.
I'd like to map out all the different historical spots. We visited a lot of historical spots in Michigan and all the way, you know, up and down the coast up there, and then all the way down through back into Missouri and stuff. We visited a lot of different places and saw a lot of little museums and stuff. And oh man, if you go to Hannibal, Missouri, and you want to go up there to see that doggone historical lighthouse that's on top of the hill that goes over the top of the Mississippi River.
Yeah.
Drive around to the park side because those stairs will kill you. Man, we walked up those stairs. They didn't need to sell a t-shirt when you get back down those stairs that I survived the stairs to the lighthouse. Me and Beverly, we had to stop every so often and rest. They had some benches, you know, part the ways up, and you could actually sit down on the bench and rest on the way up.
Man,
they would probably put the benches there for us old folks, but I even seen a little kid that was like, by the time the kid got up there, and then she found out the only reason why they went up there was to take a picture of them standing by the lighthouse.
Oh, man.
That's the only reason why we came all the way up here.
Oh.
Yeah. It was funny. But they need to sell t-shirts at the bottom of that stairs say, I survived the stairs to the lighthouse. That's pretty wild. No, but it was a great adventure. Got to see the Great Lakes. I've seen the Great Lakes before, but my wife, she's never really been to the ocean. And when you're looking at the Great Lakes up there, you're basically looking at the same view. It's that big. And it's pretty amazing. Did a little bit of rock hunting, and we came back with a whole bunch of rocks from different places that we visited for her rock garden.
Right.
We had a really good time. Met a lot of good people. But folks listening to the show out there, hope we hadn't bored you to tears. But just trying to point out something out here, you know, starting off with that man, the homeless man, 99 years old, and caring about everyone in the world more than he cares about himself. That's pretty cool.
Yes, it is.
And
really,
he's not the only one out there, but he is a good example of what, you know, people and the good people in this world are like. And I'm you know, I think there's a good person in everybody out there. You know,
yes, sir.
We were given freedom of choice of how we want to treat each other and how we want to be in life. You know, you can go through life being a jerk if you want, I suppose, but the good people of the world ain't going to stand by and allow it. Yeah, we're going to treat each other good. We're going to call you down whenever it's time to, so...
Right.
Watch your step.
I agree.
Oh, I don't know, man. How do you get this message out to the world? You know, how do you tell people all the good things in life and point it out to them so that they ain't seeing nothing but bad? You know, there's a lot of people in this world that they're hurting. You know.
You know, I got another suggestion for people that want to travel abroad, go on vacation, and so forth. Keep an open mind. I mean, you know, these people over there, what we call French fries, they call them chips. You know? And the thing is, they don't use ketchup. They use mayonnaise.
Huh.
I'm serious. Now, you know, I said something to my brother, and he's, oh my God, that sounds disgusting. Well, I'm the type of person, I keep an open mind on just about anything, right? If other people are doing it and they're liking it, I'm going to try it. So, mayonnaise, oh man, that sounds disgusting. But, duh, I tried it and, hey, it's good. It really is. I mean, it's fantastic. So then I had to try something else on my own. I like French fries, real salty, and dip them in my milkshake. I love that. And everybody I've ever said anything to about that thinks it sounds disgusting, but everybody that I've ever talked into trying it loves it. So, duh, mayonnaise, ice cream, and french fries. It is unreal. It is fantastic. It's a totally, totally different flavor, and it's great. I mean, I had several people over there try it when I did it, and they thought it sounded disgusting. But every one of them tried it liked it. I mean, so I might have started a new fad. I don't know. It was just another one of those interesting, fun things that we did. And I don't know, man. I can't get over my vacation. I'll never forget as long as I live.
Well, there's so much.
DJ, forget my name. I will not forget that trip.
There's so much to experience in this world. Sometimes people need just to slow down and take a look around you, man. We took a lot of beautiful pictures. I can't wait to share these pictures with people. There's just so much beauty in this world.
Well, and I took a lot of videos, and it's going to take me a week, maybe even 2 weeks, to go through them and sort them out, put them in order, the things showed. I mean, it took pictures of videos of the tractor shows, both of them, and I took videos of Jermaine's dad doing this and that, and Jermaine doing that, and me and Jermaine working on his magnetic solenoid motors. And so I'm going to sort them all out and make a series on Jermaine and I working on his stuff, a series on his grandfather and the stuff he does, and then another series on Jermaine's father.
Cool.
And try to pick them up in short videos and put them on YouTube so people can see, I mean, exactly what these people in the Netherlands are like. They are beautiful people. I mean, beautiful. I just don't have the words to describe the country and the people. The country is amazing. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It'll take your breath away. And the people are so friendly that after a couple of days, you don't even feel like you left home. You know, you feel like you're at home in your own hometown with all the people that you know and like. I mean, it's totally amazing. Totally.
Yeah, that's the key to the whole thing. Is a lot of these folks, they make you feel like you belong there. That's pretty cool.
So when you go overseas, go with an open mind. These people are friendly, and they've got little quirks in their lifestyle that you're not used to. Don't turn your nose up at it. Try it. You might come away with a whole new experience.
Yeah, I think that's another thing is that a lot of folks You know, they're just so busy with life, they just miss out on so much. You know, and to there's it is amazing to me when you think about all the things in this world there are to experience.
And yes.
To experience just a little bit of someone else's life, the things that they've adventures they've been on, and all the you know artistic things that they've done in their life, things that they've you know spent time with, or places they went, or whatever. I love hearing that stuff.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, if you're listening out there, you got a story you want to share, this is the place to do it. The Knights of the Round Table's got a huge table. We can expand it as necessary. That's the wonderful thing about cyberspace, is it's so big.
And you know, I don't know if this is the proper time to mention it or not, but, you know, I was born and raised in the southeast, you know. And I was 17, 18 years old before we found out that Yankee didn't really have horns, tails, these little kids to reckon. But as an older man, you know, a young man, but not a teenager anymore, I had the opportunity to go up way up north, and work on a construction job. And holy cow, those people were human beings and friendly. I'd be in a grocery store, ask a man and his wife for directions, like, where was so-and-so, you know, where do you keep the this or that in the store, and they would recognize my southern accent, and next thing I'm thinking, I know, they would get talking to me, and before I knew it, the man would have one of my arms, the old lady would have the other arm, and insist that I come home and have dinner with them, say, yeah. Meet the family. I mean, I'm serious. The Yankees, I mean, they're not as grouchy as you think they are.
Well, one of the things that I was always curious about is where do all these, I don't know, maybe call them urban myths or views on different people of the world, where do all these come from? It's almost like there's some sort of rotten individual out there wanting to try to spoil the world, right. And
like I said, I was raised in the South.
Yeah.
And I'm 17, 18 years old before I found out the Yankees didn't really have horns, tails, and eat little kids for breakfast. I mean, come on. They're human beings, just like anybody else. They've got the good side, they got the bad side, they got things they eat that sound weird to you, but try it. You know? I mean, daggone, man, it's fantastic. You know, we went up north a couple of times, actually, a big group of us, to help build power plants or do refittings on different things like Firestone. We went in there and did some work on their plant one time, and it just amazed me how friendly the people were.
Yeah. Well, you know, the years that we've been doing this show, there have been so many different people from all different nations, you know, from Ireland to Scotland to Canada and all over the world. There's been so many amazing people that's came on the Knights of the Round Table to share their stories and, solutions to problems in the world and everything under the sun. You know, that's the whole thing. You know, it's easy to get on here and talk about all the bad stuff in the world and all the doom and gloom and all the, you know, look out for this and look out for that, but it's so easy to overlook all the positive of this world.
Right.
You know, some people love the drama. You know, doomsday's right around the corner. Oh no, we got to build a bunker and this and that, you know. You know, when I talk about, you know, on the Mad Science Show, when I talk about alternative energy and the deal in case of worst case scenario, I'm always giving them a solution that, you know, worst case scenario, you can turn an old washing machine into a electric generator, you know?
Yep.
And
yep.
So that gives them an option to know that even in the bad times, there's ways that you're going to be able to get around them. And I've noticed that, you know, people out here, they pull together when times are really tough. You know, if only we could get them to pull together during the good times as well, to the extent that they would pull together during the bad times. You see what I'm trying to say here?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
You know, we're only a step away. We're only a footstep away from making this world a better place. That's the way I look at it. And there are so many people out there that go completely against everything you've been told about people of the world. Be afraid of this place. Be afraid of that place, you know. Be afraid of these people. You know, watch yourself. Somebody's going to steal from you. Somebody's going to, you know, hurt you or whatever, you know. And throughout my entire journey, I'm kind of looking over my shoulder thinking, you know, when's somebody going to get me, you know, and ain't nobody got me.
Right.
You know, I go through life, you know, paranoid as is because of a health issue that I got, but then, you know, to top off what the people of the mainstream media and even alternative media want to tell you about the world and how dangerous it is, you know, I'm sure you got to be aware that there are, you know, a few bad apples in the bunch that might do you wrong. But for the most part, I've met a whole lot of different cultures throughout my journey out there, and I realized that these folks, they were just out there doing the same thing I was, having a vacation and having fun.
Yep.
You know, and that's, got to go up into an old, old lighthouse, all the way up the top of this thing. This lighthouse had a history to it, you know, and took some pictures of, somebody took a picture of the storm that had waves that were as high as the lighthouse crashing up on the lighthouse. And the actual lighthouse itself has actually kind of tilted because of, you know, years of water erosion or whatever, and they had braced up the foundation and preserved this lighthouse.
Right.
But to actually go up inside this thing and to know about the history of the thing and then all the people that just come out there to visit that, there's so many stories to tell. It's just mind-boggling. Met a lot of good people. A lot of... you're not going to be surrounded by rude people all through your journeys. You know? There's people that always want to either hold a door open for you and, you know, or, you know, let you go first in line or whatever, and just being courteous. So, the whole myth about the world being a terrible place, I think, between your trip and mine, we debunked that. What do you think? Did I lose you?
No, actually, man, I haven't talked to her until I was hungry to eat breakfast. Okay, no, I agree with you, Shazid. I agree with you 100%. I mean, there are so many good people out there. For every, like I said, for everyone, there's at minimum 10,000 good ones. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, and from all I've been told about different people of the world, I tell you, there's a guy named Brian McLaughlin and his son Seth at an auto shop out there in Michigan, in Manistee, Michigan, that proved them wrong. And down there in Blackwater, Missouri, there are some wonderful people down there as well that proved them wrong. And these folks, you know, they don't have to try to preserve a bit of history. But they do it because they care about it. They want the people to be able to see where we came from.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And that's really important. And so, they're supposed to be...
More important than most people think.
If you're interested in seeing this little town that I'm talking about, I posted some links to their Facebook and to their Weebly page. And you can go on there and look up the history of it and see pictures of the town and stuff. And, you know, we were on our way out, and I looked out the corner of my eye, and I saw this old antique car sitting inside the window, and I had to back up to go take a peek at that, man. They're just preserving everything down there. It's just so cool. And everybody in town seemed to be really nice individuals. It felt more like being in a family-oriented place than it did some sort of tourist shop. You know, it wasn't about that. It was about you know, real people preserving real history, so that sometime down the line, your kids and your grandkids could actually be able to enjoy that, to see it. Otherwise, it just fades away, Raymond.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you always wonder what life would be like if you weren't around. You know, what this world would be like, you know, whether anybody would even know that you were even here. Well, here on Shaziz Radio, We got over 400 podcasts. They're going to know we were here.
Here you go.
They're going to know what we were all about. We wanted the people of the world to enjoy the same things that we were able to enjoy.
Yep.
I don't want to hear any more terminology about third world countries. You know? I want to hear any more stories about starving babies in the world. I want results. I want resolution. I want these people to be fed. I want them to be sheltered. I want them to have all their needs taken care of. I want each of the people out there to do whatever you can to make it so. And you think that you don't make no difference in the world, well, you're sadly mistaken, because every little thing that you do in the world causes something else to happen.
Yes, the ripple effect.
Yep. And, you know, just it's crazy how the end of our journey actually went about, because we, on the way back, we had there was a state highway patrol guy out there, and he was had his lights on, and he's slowing everybody down, right? And we're wondering, what the heck is going on? And the further we got down the road, we weren't seeing no crash or anything. But the further we got down the road, the worse the weather got. I mean, it was raining so bad and the wind blowing so bad, we were literally rolling into a storm. And there was a vehicle in front of us that didn't have very good trailer lights on it, and you couldn't see this vehicle through that storm. You could barely see a little bit of the trailer light on there. And so, you know, for fear that somebody's going to fly around me and slam right into them, I turned on my flashers. Well, when I turned on my flashers, everybody behind me turned their flashers on.
Okay, good deal.
So all the sheriff, or the state highway patrol guy, he started slowing people down. We turned our flashers on. We were all looking out for each other, and the whole traffic started slowing down. And I think that day somebody's life would have been saved.
Yep.
Just for the actions of somebody. That state highway patrol guy, he was standing out in the rain. I mean, pouring rain. And he's waving people down. Slow down.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was. It was really cool. And I just think that we were meant to be in certain places at certain times, and the trip just played out just exactly like it was supposed to. Because the people that we met, they were either helping us out, or we were helping them out. Hell, I even had to jump on there and give the motel a good rating that we stayed in last. The folks... apparently, you know, you hear about a Motel 6 and you hear a lot of crazy stories about they're not very good rated deals. But the one we met down there in Hannibal, it was the staff on there was real nice, and the place was clean, and they had a bum rating. And I went on there and gave them a 5-star rating.
Right.
You know?
Not exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. You know, you run across people like that.
Yep. One person had a bad experience, blew it out of proportion, and gave them a bad rating.
Yeah.
In fact, it was just one of those things. You know what I mean?
But these are people that are just trying to earn a living. You know, they're just trying to have an honest business and, you know, run a motel. And, you know, they were friendly from the time we came through the door till the time we left, and early in the morning I was greeted by coffee, fresh coffee right there in the lobby, and they were just, I couldn't find anything wrong with the place. You know, so why would people want to just, you know, basically talk them down to dirt?
Yeah.
I don't get it, you know. You know, I'm sure that, like you said, somebody might have had a bad experience and made it sound worse than it was, but
right, exactly. You know, I mean, daggone. You know, you're driving down the road and you see a commercial truck or whatever, and it's got this little sign on the back that says, "How is my driving?" And it gives a telephone number. You know, I never call a complaint if God does something weird. I mean, okay, it happens. But if I see a guy go out of his way to be a courteous driver, I will call that number and compliment that guy. And every time I ever do it, they say, wow, we get a lot of complaints, but we don't get anybody bragging about how good our drivers drive. I said, well, people love to complain, not me.
You know what? I'm glad you said that because I thought it was just me, but I when I go to a restaurant or whatever, I don't look at these folks. I don't look down at these folks like, you know, hey, I'm the customer and they're the servant and I better get what I want. You know, I look at these folks just like people just like me. And yep. When they do an awesome job, I want to tell them they did an awesome job. I want them to know that I appreciate the service that I got.
The fact is, they're doing their job. You know, their job is to make you feel comfortable.
Yeah.
So if they do, they're doing their job, and they're doing a dang-gone good job at that. So compliment them on it. Why not?
Yeah, and I'm not opposed to making sure that the tip is a little higher than it normally would be. It's because, look, these folks are just trying to survive. They're trying to run an honest business, and, you know, a lot of people, if they get grumpy, they'll take it out on other people, you know, not intentionally maybe, but they will, you know, just kind of have that bad attitude at you, you know, and it just makes it for an unpleasant trip or whatever. Heck, even tell those people you understand. Yeah, I know this other guy over here is being a jerk, you know, but we're, not all of us are like that, you know.
Yeah.
And as a veteran of the Navy, I always have people tell me, thank you for your service. You know, since they started that deal, that phrase, and everybody's been telling me, thank you for your service. I turned right back around, like the lady at the White House, and I said, thank you for your service, because you guys are doing something amazing out here. Most of these folks are volunteers at that White House, right? And
right.
They don't get paid to do the job that they do, but they're helping to preserve a bit of history that otherwise would have just deteriorated and went away.
Right.
And
exactly.
I said, I think that is amazing. You know? And it doesn't hurt for you to compliment people out there when you see something wonderful that they're doing. That's the way I feel about it. And you get a chance to do something special, you know, like, heck, if you're, one time my daughter and I was out and I told my daughter, I said, you want to see something cool? And she said, what's that? And I said, just watch me. And I saw this elderly couple. They were sitting over there having a meal. And before they ate their meal, they put their hands together and they prayed and, you know, thanked their Lord for, you know, the meal that they were having. And I caught the waitress and the waiter, and I asked them, I said, can you do me a favor? And she said, what? I said, well, I want to pay for these people's meal over here, but I don't want you to tell them where it came from. I just want to wait till I leave and then
right.
That kind of deal.
I've done the same thing many times in my life.
Well, when we got out to the car, my daughter was like, why'd you do that, Dad? And I said, well, if you think about what just happened here, those two people were blessed. They got their meal paid for. The waiter and the waitress, they got to be a part of that. So their life was blessed as well. Now they're probably going to go out and do that for somebody else because that was pretty cool. And I got to show my daughter something really cool that you can do that nobody, you know, would even know that you did it. But
right.
For that, you're blessed. And so if you think about, there were six people involved in this story, and they were all blessed by one, you know, action. And that's the kind of thing that I like to see, you know. I didn't do it for glory or anything like that, and I'm not even telling you this story because I want you to think I'm a good person, but I'm telling you this
exactly
story.
I know what you're trying to say, and that's not the way I took it. But I've done the same thing myself, and I didn't do it for notoriety. If I had, I'd have told them, tell them who did it. But I told them, don't.
Yeah, wait until I leave and then do it.
Right.
And that's pretty cool, man. I got to pay their bill, and, you know, I was thinking, you know, a whole lot of things run through your head. It's the elderly couple. They might had, that might have been something. You know, of course, I'm just throwing hypotheticals in there, but it could have been the case that they would have been rich and it wasn't no big deal for dinner or whatever like that. But it could have also been a case that they were maybe in a financial jam, and at that particular point in time, some total stranger did something, and now they can afford maybe some medicine or something like that. See, that's...
Let's think of the other scenario. Maybe they were rich, but then all now all of a sudden they're wondering, well, who would buy our dinner? I mean, we can afford a dinner. I mean, duh. So now they start thinking, well, maybe it's just a good Samaritan.
Yeah.
And now they go out and they see somebody, and maybe they'll do it. You know? They're rich.
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, they were over there saying their prayers before they ate their dinner, and it touched my heart in such a way that I wanted to do something special, and, you know, I hope it was God using me to give a blessing to somebody else, an answer to a prayer, you know. I hope that, you know, and even if it was just a kind gesture, it doesn't matter to me, you know.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's just the kind of thing that needs to be done by a lot of people, you know. You're standing in line, you get a few extra bucks, you're feeling blessed. Throw a few extra bucks down there on the table and tell that cashier to take care of a few people behind you.
Right.
You know, and when you do that, you start off a chain reaction. Some folks go out there and be all happy, you know, but never do nothing about it. But nonetheless, you just still made them happy. And some folks will be happy enough that whenever they have the opportunity themselves, they'll pass it on.
Right.
That whole pay it forward thing does work. You know, the positive pebbles in the pond that we keep talking about all the time. They
right.
do work. You do something out there nice in this world.
It really works, Shaziz. It really works.
You know, and I hope that folks listening to my show, you know, I hope that if you get a chance to go out there to Michigan, I hope you stop by and see Brian and Seth, and I hope you had the same good experience and good conversation with them that we did. But the young man was the first one I met, Seth, and he was so incredibly polite. He was so helpful. And Raymond, I don't care what anybody thinks. I say it was divine intervention, because the exact part for what I needed was sitting right on the shelf, not more than 4 feet away from me, and Seth walked over and picked it up, and he said, "I think this is what you need."
Yep.
Now you tell me that's a coincidence, and I'm going to say, well, you call it what you want. I'm going to call it divine intervention, because it was a miracle, because the fact is, if you go to an auto parts store and try to buy that same part for the vehicle that in question here, it don't exist, because it wasn't listed as a part for that vehicle, but it fit. So now they know. Yeah.
Man, that is cool. That is really cool.
Yeah, and it was awesome that the owner Brian, he took us on a little tour of his salvage yard, which he got a huge salvage yard out back that, you know, they get used parts off of, and they use some of the used parts to help fix people's car, you know, which makes it more affordable if you can use a used part instead of having to buy a brand new one. Sometimes a brand new one's a kill you on price, but he took us back there and showed me some old cars sitting back there. You know, I was talking to him about an old tow truck that I had, because I saw his tow truck, and it was really a nice tow truck, and I told him about it, and he said, "I'll show you an old tow truck," and he took me back there and showed me an old one out there and a deal, and, you know, we just really enjoyed our stay there, and, you know, we was there for long enough for him to fix our car and shook hands with him and thanked him for helping us out. I mean, to me, it was a miracle. To whoever, it was just a stroke of luck or a coincidence, I don't care, but, you know, that was a miracle to me.
Yeah.
The fact that we broke down right at the same spot where they, ironically enough, had the exact part that we needed to get us back on the road and keep our journey going.
Isn't that absolutely amazing?
Yeah.
Dig on it.
You know, we said a lot of prayers on the way to and fro to, you know, help us out, and here's another quick one. My wife, not once, but twice, left her purse behind with all our money in it. once in the park and once in a museum of old military World War II military airplanes that we went in and visited. And that's another good one out there. There's tons of places that you go, you know, in Michigan. There's all kinds of sights to see. Now, I can't remember what the name of that one was either. I'm going to have to look it up and post it. But anyway, the first incident, we were taking pictures of a flight simulator that my wife was sitting in, and she had set her purse down, and we was walking around, you know, looking at everything, and this lady comes up there and told my wife, said, "You might need this." And my wife was so relieved, she had her purse with all of the money in it for our travel, and she got it back.
Yeah.
Well, we were in another park where there was a little train station, and I took a picture of her standing on this old caboose, and she had put her purse on the rail, and then we were getting ready to leave up out of there, and we were sitting on the bench for a second, and then suddenly it dawned on her she lost her purse. You know, as many people as around there, not one person touched her purse. Nobody. And she went back and got her purse back.
I'll be known.
And so it's two incidents in one. I was telling her, don't let third time be a charm, because we might not get so lucky. I don't know, man. See, that's the thing. People try to scare you thinking everybody in this world is so terrible, when in fact there are so many people that are honest, outstanding, and wonderful, wonderful people, you know. And so, I'd say before you give up on humanity, you know, go out there and experience a little bit of it. Barbara Three Crows in the chat room, she said, "Hi, all. Love these stories of reaching out to others. I pulled up to a gas station one day, and a car came in that was kind of in bad shape. A woman and four children. She sent her son, about nine, in to pay for gas. I was also on my way in and something in the moment just guided me to pay for her gas. The owner told the boy I was doing this, and I left and saw him run out to his mom and tell her I saw her in my rearview mirror standing there with her mouth open. If every one of us could do something like this for a stranger, it would change the world. I believe it."
Yep, I believe it.
I believe it. Man, I'll tell you what. If you're the recipient of a miracle like that, it makes a difference in your life. So you can imagine if you do that for somebody else, what it's going to be like for them. You know,
yep.
You can feel it. It's simple as that. You know, a Knights of the Round Table is about a whole lot more than just sitting around talking about things.
Yep.
Knights of the Round Table is about getting out there, showing people there are solutions to the problems of this world. And the solutions is you. The miracle, you know what, folks? Go out there and look in the mirror. Go in your house somewhere. You got a mirror in your house, and you're going to comb your hair, and I want you to look in that mirror. And when you look in that mirror, know this, you are the miracle that you've been waiting for.
You are the person, you are the miracle. You're it.
Yep.
Hey, you're it.
Yeah. That miracle you've been wanting, you know, every single day you walk around through this world and you step over beauty, you step over treasures unlike you could have possibly imagined. And you are the miracle you've been waiting for.
Yep.
I'm going to add Barbara in there. Cool. Okay, add to group call. Hopefully this works. Yay. Well, hello there, lady. Got your microphone on?
How you doing?
Pretty good.
Hi, everybody on.
It's good to see you.
Thank you.
So,
yeah, I love this topic. Well, maybe it's not a topic. I don't know what your topic is, but I just
well, the topic is good people and good places of this world.
Ah. Well,
good or bad.
I just watched this series. I've been watching this series It's a documentary called Human. I don't know if any of you have seen it.
I haven't yet.
It's just extraordinary. I mean, I'm sitting there watching this. You know, it just has people from all over the world, different people, just close-ups of their faces, and some of them start talking and telling about their life. And you sit there and you smile, or you just start crying, or you just, you know, I mean, there's a lot. It's very deep and emotional, but joyous and amazing and extraordinary what the lives of these people, the experiences that they've had, and their deepest heartfelt feelings about things. And, you know, there was a particular two men, a Palestinian man and a Israeli man, separately, and they both spoke about this one man, the Palestinian man, his daughter, 10 years old, was on her way to school and was shot in the back of the head by an Israeli soldier with a rubber bullet, and it killed her. And he spoke about how he decided not to be revengeful and not to be hateful, because he wanted to honor her. And he had many people say to him, you should revenge her, you should be angry, you should, you know, whatever. And he said, I don't think that would be honoring her. And then it switched to the Israeli man, who spoke about his son who was killed. You know, there's a lot of turmoil there, and a lot of people are losing their lives and in different ways. And he also spoke about, of course, his grief, but his feeling that something has to end here. We have to stop this. We have to end this hate. And, you know, and they both spoke about the same thing, that it was up to them to really get to know, you know each other, sit down and get to know each other. One young Palestinian man was saying how he had such hatred for the Israelis. That's how he grew up. And he started to take a class in Hebrew because he wanted to know more about the people, the languages. And in that class, he said, there were all kinds of people. And he got to be friends with many of them. Many of them were Jewish young people, and they became very close. And they all began to realize how so much alike they are. Yeah. And how they've been pretty much, you know, inducted to be hateful toward each other, you know. So anyway, the documentary is called Human, and there's about four series of it, and it's very beautiful. And the landscapes that they show of the earth that I've never, ever seen, places that they show in this documentary. It is just breathtaking. It just, you know, just brought tears to my eyes to see how extraordinarily beautiful this earth is, and all the people, all these people that we never have an opportunity to hear them speak or tell their stories or see anything about them, and they're just like we are.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, really, they're not any different. They may dress differently, they may have, you know, different skin color, but there you go. They are just human, like us.
Well, I'll tell you, I can't wait to see that series now, because it's got me intrigued. But, you know, on this journey, I told Raymond earlier, I said, you know, because of certain circumstances in life, life has left me a bit jaded about things, you know. And, you know, the more I get out there and actually interact with people, the less that the stories of the mainstream media, and even some of those in the alternative media about how terrible this world really is, I have seen more beauty. I can't wait to share some of the pictures with everybody that my wife and I took on our journey. And the beauty of what we've been given is so amazing, so beyond words, that, you know, only pictures tell what, you know, I'm trying to explain to you. When you see some of the photos that we took while we were down through all the places that we showed up and the people that we had met through this process, you know, Brian's Auto Parts service down here in Michigan. I couldn't say enough about how wonderful and how much of a blessing that they stayed an hour over when they were supposed to be closing. They didn't have to do that. They went out of the way to not only make us feel at home, but to get us back on the road. To me, you know, and I told them that too. I said, to me, this is a big deal. You know, and so if you're ever out in that neighborhood out there in Manistee, Michigan, and you're in a jam, call these folks up. Go, even if you ain't in a jam, just go visit and say hi. Say, I heard about you guys. Because they're people just like you. They're just trying to, you know, make a living in the world and trying to be nice and treat people the way they want to be treated. And I'll tell you what, man, I will never forget for the rest of my life and probably then beyond of how decent that these people really are. And I see you posted a link in there to that deal. I'll see if I can post it later over to the chat room.
Yeah, this is volume 3. It starts from 1, but I just happened to watch this one last night. And I just became so intrigued, and watching staying up late. I think this is actually someone suggested in the, you know, how people discuss the show they're watching, and they suggested, several people suggested that the authors of this documentary, if they could separate that one part of the Palestinian father and the Israeli father and set it up as just its own talk, you know, for people to watch. They said it's so important. But
yeah,
there were just many, many beautiful human stories. And I find it kind of ironic that we have to say, or we find ourselves saying, wow, these people, they're just like us.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, is how ironic is that we find ourselves?
Well, one of the things about the Palestinian and Israel situation out there was the story that touched my heart the most and really made me feel sad was an interview with a reporter that was asking two little Palestinian girls, do you ever want peace with Israel? And those two little girls, they said, no, they killed our mommy and daddy. We hate Israel. We don't ever want peace with Israel. And I'm saying to you, if you could flip that scene over to the other side and ask a couple little Israeli girls, you might get the same exact answer. And the only way to ever break those chains and that perpetual, you know, Hatfield and McCoy feud between two countries or nations or whatever you want to call them, and the only way to break those chains, to stop that, is to somewhere find a middle ground, find some forgiveness, and start to work towards peace, you know. We have been hearing for years, I mean, literally, probably decades, about, you know, peace talks in Israel and Palestine and stuff, and there is, you know, it just never seems to come about. Somebody at the very last minute blows it all out of the water and they're back to fighting again. Well, that'll be a forever thing if it's never resolved. You know, and those children will be the future fighters in those two nations.
Yeah, I kind of think that, of course, I think the people themselves, I, you know, and I have heard various people speak like that, and young people, but I also do know that there are Palestinians and Israeli people coming together, you know, just your common ordinary people.
Yeah.
You know, no, I think the leaders, of course, the leaders are the ones who don't want peace.
I believe that. There's a story out there somewhere. I can't remember where I heard it, but I love stories of people. That's why I love what you're talking about, Barbara. There's a story out there about a German soldier and an American soldier during Christmas that actually stopped fighting, sat down, and had a meal together. And they realized that, you know, that they are just alike. They're people. They're just people, you know, humans.
And well, wasn't it in the stories something like that? Was it World War II? I don't know.
I think it was World War II.
Where they, Christmas Eve, they all stopped fighting and came to middle ground and sat down and had whatever they had, rations together, yeah, and sang Christmas songs, and then they all went back to their sides and started firing at each other, because that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Well, what sense does that make? Why couldn't that one little gesture make them realize that the fight was ridiculous? There was no reason to be killing each other. I mean, they met on common ground. That's not the only story like that I've ever heard.
That's right. Well, one young man was speaking about, I guess he was in the Vietnam War, or maybe it was more recent, I think Iraq or something. I think it was Iraq, and he apparently had a confrontation, a very close situation with an Iraqi or an enemy soldier, and he said he stood there in front of me. I apparently the young American had the gun on him, and the other fella didn't have anything, because he said he looked at me in my eyes. I looked at him in his eyes. He was weeping, this man, and shaking, and I suddenly saw another human being. Now, he said he couldn't kill that man, and he said this changed my life. He said I survived and he survived. He said at the moment, he said it was either my life or I would have to take his life. But then something shifted. He saw this man, a human being, he said, and changed his life. It changed him about the war and what he was told to do and what he was told about those people. You know, and so that there's this place, you know, and there's a lot of veterans that speak about this, of how they are trained, so severely trained, that to not even see these as humans, you know, not a human being. And,
well, on that,
and it does something, it does something to them, it affects them.
On that note, there's a new method of training that they have been doing for quite some time. That it, see, back during World War I and World War II, because of the type of culture that most people were raised in, they were raised to believe that killing was wrong and there were so many instances of soldiers that came back from war with just as much ammunition as they were issued when they went into war, because they never fired the gun, because they understood that it would be actually taking another life. Well, in order to get around that, the governments of the world started training people instead of on a bullseye target, which, you know, everybody can shoot a bullseye. It's not, you know, it's not that big of a deal, and some people do it really well. But they started training people, and even modern-day police officers train using black silhouettes. And so it gives you a I never can say that word. It makes you desensitized to actually shooting at a human target. Which, you know, if you weren't trained on that particular deal, the odds of you shooting, you could hesitate long enough and you would get shot. That's their theory about the deal. And so you get used to shooting at this shape, the shape of a person, then it's more likely that you're going to fire than not fire. You see what I'm saying? It's really disturbing to think that our supposed leaders of the world, and Patty said it in the chat room just a minute ago, the way to, let me get, scroll up and read her comment. Where's it at? I saw it there a second ago.
Do you want me to read it?
Yeah.
She says, I can see the people of the world living in peace. People do not create wars or avarice against each other. The leaders promote the hate and keep it going. There will always be those who will hate. There will always be those who will love. Without the force of government to promote hate, the people will choose peace and love. I do believe that.
I believe that
I
as well.
I do as well.
You know, not when you see people that don't know each other rush into dangerous situations to pull a total stranger out of a vehicle, a burning car, or a burning building, and, you know, people just becoming superheroes in the heat of the moment, without any care about themselves or thinking, you know, I'm gonna die if I try to save this person. You know, there have been incidences in this world where people just turned a blind eye. And if you ever want to see me, like what I would be like if I was really mad, go back and look at a video. You actually probably have a bad word warning in there, because I was pretty heated about the whole deal. I saw a video where there was a crowd of people standing around in China, and they were stomping on this little boy's hand. They were tormenting this little boy, and there nobody in the crowd.
I saw that.
Stopped them. And
I did.
I was so angry at what I saw there. You know, they were standing around, they were laughing while this one individual, a couple individuals, was tormenting this little boy. And you know, had I would have been there, I wouldn't have just been on the aggressor. First, I'd have got the kid away from the aggressor, and then I would have went off on all the bystanders that stood there idly by and was either laughing or not intervening to protect that child. Now, I'm not normally a violent individual, but that's the straw that broke the camel's back, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
I do, and I want to just, I'm thinking on this, what you're saying, and I want to be very careful here about what I say. Now, I feel, and I've seen many incidences like that, what you're talking about, and no people just standing there and not intervening. And I'm wondering if this is increasing, or is this only what we are being shown, you know, on the media?
Well, it may be a case of both. I don't know, but you know, I have seen a lot of incidents where, you know, it's almost like pack mentality. A fight breaks out and everybody wants to rush in there to, you know, fight, you know, Jerry, that kind of thing. And to me, I just don't understand it. You know, I don't understand where people can find amusement in somebody else being hurt. You know, even if it's a jerk, you know, that maybe deserved to get a trip behind the woodshed or something like that. It's still a human being that made probably a poor choice and made somebody upset. But there are limitations to, you know, retaliation, if that's the word that I need to use or whatever. You know, I'm not advocating go out and beat up the bad guy, but also I'm not advocating, you know, stand there and take a beating either. But the justice in this world seems to be skewed towards the dark side when it comes to a whole lot of different issues out there, mostly leading back to government or media or people's portrayal of what's cool and what's not, you know.
Well, if you want to, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think Barbara said a mouthful when, on her second scenario about, is that what we're seeing more of? Well, think about this. Newspapers want to sell newspapers. Now, how many people are going to buy a newspaper that shows an old woman squatting down to help a young boy that's crippled? Okay, maybe 10, maybe 100. But to show an old woman beating the heck out of a teenage kid with a cane, they're going to sell a lot of newspapers on that one.
Well, it makes you wonder where...
Yeah, it's more there in the... Again, he who does not read the newspaper is uninformed. He who reads the newspaper is misinformed. Same goes with television news broadcasters.
That's true.
Well, it makes you wonder where the people got these views that certain things were okay. You know, I see both the light and the dark side of humanity. That you're capable of so much that could make this world so wonderful, and instead choose to go on the dark side of things and do something rotten to people. Now, even that story where the little kid, you know, getting his arm stomped on and hit by that adult, you know, as infuriated as I am, you know, I don't know. I just don't have the words to say how bad that really got under my skin deep down in my soul. You know, at one hand, I wanted to just go around and just become the aggressor because it was just that wrong what was going on.
Well, isn't that what we have to be careful of? I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah, you're right.
That's what turns us into those types of people that we are looking at screaming about what they're doing.
I think the right thing for me would have been to stand between me and that child and actually take the beating myself, you know, because, you know, in my book of faith, you're supposed to turn the other cheek, you know, and if they wanted somebody to beat on, I would rather it have been me than that child.
Yeah, we speak about loving. We speak about we need love. And, you know, I believe that love will heal the world. Love will change things. And compassion and doing, you know, these little random things for strangers just because we're guided to, not for any kind of, you know, looking like we're great people or we're better than anyone. Just because we have a good heart and we see someone in need. But we have, I think it's a fine line we walk, because if we are following that Creator's law, you know, I think we're being pressured greatly to slip into the same behavior, because what's happening seems to be escalating and so severe.
Yep.
That it pushes us into that frame of mind where we want to punch somebody else.
I think you're right. And, you know, there's an old saying where I come from, two wrongs don't make a right, you know.
Exactly.
And it's true. You know, as I don't know whether, you know, like I said, I don't know which one of these stories out there to trust and which not, because, you know, for some agenda, somebody puts a video or something out there to either make you think the world's a terrible place or whatever, you know. But you got to be really cautious out there, because, like you said, Barbara, you can get sucked into it and become the person that you despise, you know. The lie.
And I think that's, I mean, if you want to talk about the dark side, I think that may be, very well be, and I'm going to say, an agenda to really pit us all against each other.
Yeah.
You know, and when you are struggling yourself, you're often prompted by certain others or even media or certain beliefs to find some kind of relief or even joy, unfortunately, in harming another. Or someone else is to blame for your misery.
Yeah.
So you have to pick on them or you have to hate them. This, to me, is what is happening now so strongly. This whole agenda to push us, pit us against each other. And like I said in that documentary, you see all kinds of people from all over the world speaking about their lives. And it could be my life, this old woman was speaking about. Or it could be your life and your experience, one of those men were speaking about, you know. And yeah, they're all kind of like, they're just the human family, you know. But we don't look at others that way. We're being told daily, those people over there are what's making your life miserable, you know. They are the enemy, you know. So I think that people are hurting and people are in fear. And instead of finding a solution of reaching out in a good way, their solution, they're being told, is to hate someone else.
Well, I see exactly what you're talking about, and I agree. You know, it's just, if you go back and you listen to what Paul Harvey said back in 1965, you know, if I were the devil...
Oh yeah!
I tell you what, I just can't. I play that a lot.
I love Paul Harvey. He was so fabulous, wasn't he?
Yeah, that was a man who, you know, I would even go as far as this, to say it's to some extent was a prophet, because he explained.
I was just going to say
he explained the future just the way it's playing out, and I'm telling you folks out there listening in that the only ones that can change this and turn this thing around is us. You know, Patty in the chat room was talking about, she said, I would never stand by and watch a child be harmed. I would do whatever I could to keep them from harm. If it meant sacrificing myself to protect them, I would do so. And she said, I have done so, actually. But I use words as my weapons, if you can call it that, by speaking the truth of what they were doing against the children and showing them who they were. And I have brought people to tears because they saw themselves for the first time. However, I would lay down my life to protect a child if I had to. I could not do otherwise if that were the only option. You know, I feel like that heart that's in Patty is in all of us. I feel like we all have that option available to us to be the ones, if necessary, would be willing to sacrifice pain or suffering or even the worst case scenario in order to protect others. So this world ain't all that bad. And through Raymond's journey on his vacation and my journey, that both had some really amazing correlations, and the fact that we came back looking at the world in a different view and actually realizing that out there in this world there's so much to see and so many stories to be told and beautiful scenery and just amazing people. You know, this is a worthy cause as far as I'm concerned, to tell people out there that this world, it still has hope.
I believe that too. And that documentary will give that to you. You know, I don't know, I was reading something about that creator, that the people, the humans of the earth, are creator's hope for the world.
Well, and you I know? Think if they get it, if they finally realize that, you know, I've told a story sometimes, quite a few times, about as many funerals as I've been to, and I had to go be the pallbearer at those funerals, and I always watch people, and I always pay attention and listen to their stories and stuff. But one of the things that breaks my heart every time I see that is to know that the prior time before this tragedy occurred, that families were pitted against each other, and you know, it took a tragedy to pull that family together. Just like if you look at stories like Katrina or any other major incident, things that happened over in Japan during the tsunami and earthquakes around the world, of how many people around this world reached into their own pockets and at least financially tried to do something to assist those people that were in need around this world. That to me is the miracle. And that's what we need on a daily basis, instead of waiting for the tragedies to occur, to actually get involved prior and protect one another, to be the good caretakers that I believe our Creator meant us to be. You know, of not just each other, but the land and the animals. I've told stories, and you've told stories, and Patty's told stories about things that they've witnessed in beauty in the least likely places. Wonderful things that have occurred to us in our lives that we shared with everybody out there. You know, and if you love nature, nature will love you right back, and if you love people, they'll love you right back. I'm telling you, I've witnessed it. This is my testimony to the greatest gift that we as humanity's ever been given, this option to...
There's been many, many, many smaller catastrophes that have hit small towns in the United States and so forth. Katrina was a major one, okay? But Katrina is a perfect example of what I'm getting ready to talk about. When the Hurricane Katrina was over, it was less than 24 hours, there were thousands and thousands of people all over Louisiana, Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, from all over the country that went there and were there helping.
They beat the government there, Raymond.
Please.
They beat the government there.
Yeah, the government, I mean, who spends hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayers' money to help people in natural disasters, took 7 days to get there. How many of you other people would have died of hunger or died of thirst before FEMA got there? I mean, the main thing these people need is main thing was fresh water. There were thousands of people that just took their own personal money, bought bottles of water, jugs of water, and spent their own money, gasoline, and time to go there to help these people out. I mean, there are many, many small catastrophes in little bitty towns. Like, I saw one town, I forgot where I was coming from or where I was even going, but I went to this small town. I mean, it was nothing more than a trailer park town. It was way out in the country, and a tornado had hit the night before. I mean, there were pieces of trailers and furniture and clothes scattered everywhere. And I saw at least 25 or 30 vehicles with out-of-state plates on them. People were already there trying to help out. You know,
we had people from here up in the Hudson Valley putting a call out within hours. People were lining up to load stuff up into trucks that people rented and drive down there. Loaded with stuff.
That's the theme of this show today. There are more good people than there are bad.
Patty said in the chat room, had a family who lost everything, who stayed to help people they did not even know. They did not stop until they were made to leave by force. When the government showed up and tried to tell people, you got to get out of here, you know, we're here to help.
We're in charge.
Yeah. It wasn't the government who was there standing there first. It was the people, Raymond, Patty, or Barbara. It was the people that were there.
Yes.
And that's the point that I was trying to make earlier. If you want to see the miracle that you've been looking for, go in your bedroom or go in your bathroom and look right directly in the mirror, and you will see the miracle that you've been waiting for.
You dang all right.
You know? Right. If we could get that one message across, if there was ever a bumper sticker made, I would love to have a million of those bumper stickers and pass those things around to everybody and his brother. If you want to see a miracle, go look in the mirror. You know, you're the miracle you've been looking for. And if people could understand that they have so much to offer each other and the world, you know, we're already seeing changes in this world. We're seeing people that are actually stepping out of the way and doing good things. And it's probably been happening all along. But the mainstream media...
It's just the news media just blows the pet crap out of proportion, you know?
Yeah, they don't care about nothing but the bottom line and the ratings. You know, I don't care about the ratings.
The news on television in years, but if all of a sudden some news broadcaster started predicting a show telling only good stories and true stories, I think I would watch it every day.
I'd tune in. Because I want to hear people being able to overcome adversity.
They ain't going straight.
You know? And those people...
I think the majority of people would like to see news like that, you know? But they're not offered that.
Report anything bad unless it's something like a catastrophe and report the good part about how people come in and help out.
Well, I tell you what, we're offering it. I want people to start sending in their stories. If you got a good story about something, some adversity or some miracle that happened to you, you know, send it to us. Let us read it on the air, or even join us on the Knights of the Round Table on the Skype deal and tell the story for yourself in your own words.
Yes, absolutely.
That's a great idea.
People need to hear this stuff.
We start our own news broadcast program right here.
Yeah.
I love it. That's a great idea.
Right here.
Well, we got access to this technology. I think now's the time to take advantage of it. Because I tell you what, there are people out there. Huh? There are people out there right now that are teetering on the edge of despair because they think the whole world is messed up. And what we've talked about here just in this little show alone, you know, we've already debunked the myth. The whole world ain't bad, folks. I'm telling you, we got a lot of things we got to look out for because we got a lot of knuckleheads driving the boat, so to speak.
Right.
You know, but we don't need them driving the boat. We can take over. You know, we just start putting our oars out and just overcome their motor, their big engine that they're using to try to drive us off the waterfall, and we just paddle in the other direction. That's the way it goes, because, you know, one of the things that I play on here is a little podcast of the grasshopper talking about the ants. He said, you let one ant stand up to us, and they outnumber us 100 to 1. And when they realize that, our way of life ends. And there's a lot to be said there. We're not advocating a violent overthrow of the government or anything like that. It ain't nothing for us to all step away and have our own picnic, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yep.
We step away, have our own picnic, build our own system beside, system for the people, by the people, of the people, and just let theirs become obsolete. When they don't have everybody bowing down to them and fighting for them and trying to support the system, the same system that wants to keep them enslaved. When we the people are actually, helping each other with our gardening and learning and knowledge sharing and stuff like that, that's what this whole entire deal was all about to begin with.
Yep.
To show people.
Yeah, I just listening to you, I feel really happy, Shaziz. I'm sitting here smiling, because this is really what it is about. Yeah, and
yep.
Patty says we are advocating a revolution of love.
Yeah. Ain't nothing wrong with that. I love to hear this stuff. I want this stuff to be like a tidal wave of love. You could get hit by a tsunami of love and not get hurt.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good deal.
You'll be carried along.
Yeah, you'll be joining
sweetly,
up.
Right?
Yep.
No, it's in everybody, really, I do. And it sort of just takes maybe one or a few people just to say, come on this way, we're going down this pathway. Here's what we're choosing. We have a choice. You can go down that pathway or you come along with us.
Well, I'll tell you what, I had a revelation in a vision or a dream or whatever it is you want to call it, of standing in the presence of my God. And standing in the presence of that kind of love, even if you wanted to say or think or do something wrong, you couldn't. I mean, that type of feeling, there's no human words to explain that type of love. To, I'm talking unconditional love. I'm talking a purity of love that's, you could take all the best writers of the world and they could not put it down in human words of what I felt during that deal. And so I wish that everyone on this planet could literally experience the same dream or vision or enlightenment that I felt that day.
You know, when Barbara said something about a tsunami of love, instantly I got a vision in my head, and all I could see is big signs saying, grab your surfboard and ride the waves.
Yep.
Ride the wave. Holy cow, what a ride.
Surfer dudes and dudettes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. We have had at our disposal the best tool, the best defense mechanism in the history of history. It's been carried around in our heart all these years, and all we had to do in order to make this world a better place is to open up those gates and let it flow. That's all we had to do. We fell to greed and all kinds of other crazy things, and missed out on the big picture of what the human experience is all about.
Yeah, we were talking earlier about, just randomly reaching out and helping someone, Those little stories are really wonderful, and when it happens to you, it's just extraordinary. And when you are able to also be guided to do that, it's like, to me, that's the unconditional love, that you're talking about. It's not, there's no condition here. I just felt guided to pay for that woman's gas. It just came to me, I didn't think about it. I didn't stop and think about it. It just flowed through me. And now listening to you guys, I'm thinking, that's unconditional love. Because I didn't have any agenda. There was like, no, if I do this will, whatever. That's unconditional love, is reaching out and just being there for someone, or just gifting someone something because you you know, sharing and
Barbara,
supporting.
You drove off and didn't even stick around for a thank you.
No.
That is so cool.
Well, that wasn't in my mind.
But, you know,
that's what I'm saying. It wasn't like it's that it's just not a, there's not an agenda there when you do that. It's just, I don't know. It was like, maybe it was, you know, creators, you know, a voice or a message coming through me. It just happened, you know, and like I said, just thinking about when we do things like that from our heart, it is unconditional love because there's no condition that you expect in return.
Yep, that's that to me is the biggest lesson that this world has to learn.
You know, but you know, I feel that you had that experience, and I have also spoken about my experience as well with that indescribable love, that we have no words for it, and we don't have an experience, you know, an earthly experience, a human experience. We do love each other, we do feel love, and it's some form of joy that we experience. It's an elation that we go through and a wonderful feeling, but it is not compared to what Shaziz is talking about, because I've experienced it as well. And many people, our human language and our experience cannot and does not describe that. But I feel in my heart that God, the Creator, I call Great Spirit, loves every human being unconditionally.
I believe that.
If only people could know that, they would stop looking for love in all the wrong places.
Well, I'll tell you one thing's for sure. You know, I may not walk through the gates of what they call heaven. Maybe my life wouldn't end up good enough. Maybe I didn't learn what I needed to learn or whatever. But I could spend eternity in the worst imaginable hell just with that one little time that I got to spend was all the proof I ever needed of divine intervention. It was all the, it was so amazing. That one instance in my life could get me through an eternity of whatever comes next.
I'd like to add a little bit to my experience. I don't know if I had done that before, but you know, in being in that embrace, that embrace, when I was told I have to come back, I felt such resistance and such fear. I did not want to come back to this earth. And as I was coming back into my physical self, I heard this message, this voice said to me, and I believe it was Creator's voice, said to me, no matter what, everything will be all right. And boom, I was back in my body with tears flowing down my face. And that message, no matter what, everything will be all right, I truly believe for every one of us, that is the message.
I believe that too. You know, that I was humbled that day. Unlike anything I can even explain, I was humbled that day. Because the same dream, the same vision, I got to see both sides. I got to see literal what hell would be like, and it isn't nothing like the book says. It isn't all the hype on TV and, you know, all the Hollywood version of what. If you could imagine a total separation from all that is good, the total opposite of everything that is love, just you in your own mind, which is your worst enemy, your worst nightmare is by you know, your own mind. But for seeing both sides of that fence, to see, you know, even in science, the further you get away from the light, the darker it gets. The further away you get away from love, the worse things get. And it's, you don't even have to be what they call religious or spiritual to understand that. But this experience that I had, it humbled me in my life to the extent that there were things in this world that were important to me before that just don't even scratch the surface. They're even getting close to mattering anymore. What matters is that I can share somehow, some way, get the message out of me that I learned something that day that humanity really needs to be able to experience for themselves. I believe you experienced that, Barbara, and I believe Raymond's experienced that. I believe that a lot of these people that we have on the Knights of the Round Table, Patty, and the people that show up regularly in the chat room, like Stephen Gibbons and others, and I believe that we've all went through something that is so profound that had we not have, we wouldn't get it. We'd be just like, you know, the rest of the world, haphazardly tiptoeing through the tulips and hoping for the best. But now I see that there's so much more to life, and there's so much more after this life than you can possibly imagine. There is a higher purpose for each and every one of you out there. So please, folks, don't ever underestimate your value of yourself. Don't overestimate the value of yourself. Understand that we're all on equal ground. And not one of us is better nor worse than each other. But if you can just experience just a fraction of what I felt during that time, you'd understand why it is I'm passionate, and why Barbara's passionate, and Patty and Raymond. You'd understand why we do these shows. Because looking out into this world and all that we've been told about why we should fear one another, or why we should hate each other, or, you know, look over our shoulders, or behind every bush, or the boogeyman under the bed, somebody doesn't want us to see the true light that is within our heart that we could share to the world.
That's for sure. I was watching this talk about this young, these two young men. They're in their early 20s, and both of them were kind of like living in this shelter for young people who were, you know, troubled or, you know, had needed help or support. A bunch of young men, right? Two brothers. This young boy, he was talking about how his dad hurt him so much and used to beat him up and so on, and how he hasn't seen his dad in 10 years. But he and his brother decided to live on the streets of New York City homeless for a couple of weeks, just to see what it was like, to see what goes on with these homeless people. And of course, there they were out there in January. It was not such a great time to be in the city streets of New York. They got all kinds of help from other homeless people. How to get your cardboard boxes together, and where's the best place to sleep during the night, and where not to go, and where the places are where you can get food, or, you know, a soup kitchen. And so these other homeless people, old people, young people, helping them, you know, reaching out to help these two young men who were experimenting. They told them, so we're just testing, we just want to experience a homeless, you know, being homeless. We're not homeless, but we want to experience this, you know. We want to see what's going on. And it was really amazing, because they were in a soup kitchen and they were talking to all kinds of people in there, and this one young man was saying how he doesn't have a home. He's living homeless. He doesn't have anything. But he feels that God has a purpose for him. And he said, that's all I know in my heart, is God has a purpose for me. There's a reason I'm here on this earth. And that was like amazing to me. Here's this. No, there's no bitterness, and, you know, and he was saying how we're looked at like animals. People don't see us as human, you know. We don't have a home. Things went bad for us, and, you know, but people just walk past us, or even, you know, call us names or ignore us and are mean or cruel to us. And we're just people, just like others are, you know. But he said, the main thing for me was, he said, I know God has a purpose for me. I know that's the reason why I'm here on this earth. And here he is, completely homeless, a young man with nothing. maybe just those words, you young man, maybe that's what you're here for is to give those words. That's you know,
right.
That you believe, even in the dire circumstances that you are experiencing in the cruelness and also the goodness of others, that you are sharing that in this on this video, you know. Maybe that's your purpose, just to share that, you know. I don't know.
I understand and I agree. I believe that everybody's carrying around a message. I believe everybody's carrying around a piece of the puzzle. And your piece of the puzzle makes, you know, like I said, you take a 500-piece puzzle and you take a few pieces of those puzzles out and you just throw them in the trash and forget about them, you'll never get the big picture. And for humanity to ever reach the ultimate potential of what we could become, literally, you have to have those pieces of the puzzle to finish that picture. And so while you're out there warring with each other, your nations, your neighbors, your fellow brothers and sisters around the world, you're taking pieces of the puzzle out. And every time you do that, it sets us back so much further behind. If we're ever to finally get to the end of this deal where we all get to see the big picture and know all the secrets of the world or the universe or whatever you believe, you know, to become the gods or goddesses that we were in training to be or whatever. I don't know. I don't have all the answers. All I have is a little bit that is me, my piece of the puzzle, you know, that I'm putting in there with yours to, we got a little corner of the picture going right now. And we're adding more people and more pieces of the puzzle together. Together we're finding solutions for everything from alternative medicine to alternative energy to just companionship with one another and meeting new friends from across the globe. That's what it's all about. And when we finally manage to get all these pieces of the puzzle in place and we all finally get to see, we'll have all the answers we were looking for. So right now there's no reason to argue over which religion you are or which background or what color your skin is. We're all in the same boat together. And we're all going to find out when we finally make it to the end, when the big picture's all revealed and the veil's lifted, we're going to know the truth. You know? And so in the meantime, we should be doing what we can to make things right. You know, in my book of faith, it says no man knows the time or day that he'd come like a thief in the night, right? Well, that means to tell me that, you know, I can either sit around and worry about the time or day, or I can do whatever I can to make this world better while I'm here with the time that I have at my disposal. And so that's my payback to humanity. That's my payback for all the people who paved the roads to get me to where I'm at now.
Don't you feel that we are creating, I mean, I don't believe in a hell as like people, you know, or all the comic book hell, you know.
Yeah.
I don't believe in that hell. I think we're creating hell here on Earth.
I believe you're right.
And well, I think we can create heaven here on Earth.
That's what I've been saying for so long on this show. I literally believe, because of the words in my book of faith, I literally believe that we were given the choice to either create a hell on Earth or to literally create a heaven on Earth.
Exactly. Yeah. I do believe that.
I want to bring up what Barbara said earlier one more time. Create a tsunami of love and create a surfboard. Create
you know,
a surfboard.
In Genesis, in my book of faith, in Genesis, it said that God created man in his own image, which makes us creators. We create our own pain. We create our own suffering. We create our own destiny. We were given free will and the most wonderful gift. If you look at this earth and you can't see beauty and amazement, I'm in awe. When I step back and I look at all that we've been given, this earth is an amazing self-contained biosphere of epic proportions. If you work with nature, nature will work right back with you in the best of the ways. And as far as energy goes, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough, because this earth is a thermal electric generator of epic proportions.
And it also is a thermoelectric generator of love.
Yeah.
And this earth, and this mother, this being, this, you know, this, because I, you know, of course, I'm not a, and I don't even shouldn't really even have to say this, but I'm a very spiritually connected person to the Mother Earth, to nature, to the nature beings, you know, and to the point where sometimes I just weep because of the joy and the beauty that I see.
Yeah.
It just touches me so deeply, you know, just a forest or whatever, a cloud formation or, you know, I mean, I went down here the path this morning around 6:30 to put down tobacco at the altar here, and because I'm a native person who works with the spirit of the tobacco, which is our tradition as the offering of gratitude and prayer. And we have our what we call an inipi. It's a sacred lodge here where we have ceremony, and I went down there to offer my morning prayer and praying for the sun dancers, by the way. Well, this is the last day of the sun dance out in Rosebud in South Dakota, and a couple of our women that we have here in our family are out there dancing for peace and healing and help for the children and everyone. And I put down my tobacco and prayer, and I looked up in the sky, and there was one beautiful cloud in the formation of a butterfly right above me.
Wow.
And I just you know, things like that just touch me, are so significant. And somebody could say, yeah, right, a butterfly in the cloud. But no, it was the formation of a butterfly. And the butterfly happens to be a personal, what we call a personal ally, medicine for me. It came to me in a very unique way during a ceremony. So it does mean something to me personally, and I did see the butterfly, and yes, it is a response, I feel, truly, but I feel that the healing is out there on the earth, that get out of the box that you're living in, get out of, you know, the square box and the confinements that you live in, go out on the mother as best you can, take a little walk, go someplace where there is just the nature, and just sit quietly, and open your heart, close your eyes, open your ears. You will hear extraordinary sounds, birds and the breeze and the trees talking, with the wind touches the way they touch the leaves, and there are so many things that you will experience that will touch you so deeply. I always find peace and a healing when I do that, and it's right outside your door. And yep. We were gifted to live here on this mother that gave us everything we would ever need. Every medicine, clean water, clean air, seeds that will reproduce foods, beautiful foods. And as you say, the energies that we needed, no matter what we ever needed as human beings, was here already for us.
Yep.
This is such an extraordinary gift that we were given.
I also believe that just as our Creator breathed life into us, that it bred life into this planet that we're on, and that gave us the power to literally breathe life and love into each other, you know. I believe that with everything I got, that you're the healer, you know. You're the miracle that you've been waiting for. Look at modern day medicine. You know, somebody drowns and people come there and they know the techniques, and some would just call it science, you know. You pump their heart for them and keep their blood circulating, and then you take your breath and you breathe breath into them and you bring them back alive, you know. Tell me how many thousands of times that's been done since we figured it out. You know, that to me is a miracle, and it's also proof of what we've been saying all along. You find things in nature and you learn from nature. There's healing in nature. There's if you take care of this world that I believe has a life of its own, if you take care of this world, then this world will take care of you, just as you take care of each other. The same applies. What do you think, Raymond?
I think you're right, 100%. I love it.
Well, originally, according to our elders and the tradition, is that we were put here on this Mother Earth to be the stewards of the Earth as well as of each other as one big family, one big human family.
See, we both had the same exact view on how it all came to be.
Maybe.
You know?
Huh.
It's just amazing to me.
Pero después yo con pan fresco, yo aprendí con...
Tell them they're live on air, Raymond. Tell them to say hi.
Say hi to the people.
Hi.
That's my wife.
Oh, man. So, I'll tell you what, it's always a blessing to do this show. You know, I'm honored and I'm humbled that people want to come here and listen, and I'm honored and humbled that I had the experience to meet up with people in a different state than where I'm at, and to meet people from around the world. Folks, if you're ever in Michigan, go visit Brian and his son, Seth, at their Brian's Auto Parts and Service. You know, that's not a commercial for fun, for financial gain. No, this is because this man did, and his son did something wonderful for me and my wife, and I want people to know of what they did, right?
I had an experience along similar lines with a man and his son, and I was going out to South Dakota, actually, to Sundance a few years ago, and we had an old camper, and something started to happen. We had some problems with it, and we pulled off up near the border up there, the border of, I guess we were going in Chicago, through Chicago, or before we went through Chicago, and we stopped at one of those off-the-road trucker stops. I'm pretty sure you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They're open all night, and all the truckers stop there, and they all line up these great big, you know, trucks, and they all idle them out there throughout the night and rest and eat and wash up. There's showers there and everything. So we stopped there. We had no choice. There was no place else to go. The people who came to help us off the road, they wanted to drive or tow us to their garage, but we would have had to wait 2 days, right, before they could have got to our vehicle. And we pulled in, and one of the women that was with us, she said, you know, her husband was a trucker, and she said, this is going to be a good place because there's all these mechanics that pull in here. Sometimes they're here all night to help the truckers, right? So we go in to get some coffee and get, it's probably about 2 o'clock in the morning, get some coffee and something to eat, and there's all kinds of guys in this place, and here we are, three women. And, you know, a lot of these men had heavy duty tattoos and, you know, a certain kind of look to them, you know, and we were all kind of a little, you know, unsure where we were, what we should be doing. And my friend went to talk to one of these men outside, and they said that they would take a look, that they were mechanics, and they often helped the truckers. And so this dad and his son, this is what they do for a living. They hang out at trucker stops, and they help truckers. Well, they fixed our vehicle. Took them a couple of hours, and they were the nicest people. They were so sweet to us, the nicest guys, and they didn't charge us a thing. They just sent us on our way, you know. And that was like an amazing thing. We tried to offer them some money, but they would not take it, you know, and there you go. That was a beautiful thing.
Yep. Like I said, for every bad person, there's more than 10,000 good ones.
Well, I suppose part of what I'm saying, too, is the first, when you have a sort of like an idea about the way people look, you know?
Right.
Is what I'm trying to say here, too, you know?
Right.
Yeah, these guys were heavily tattooed. They all had black leather outfits on or whatever, and lots of hair and beards. And you know, so we kind of, it's sort of like, and I recognized that. I said, well, you know, all three of us were kind of like a little unsure. But then as the story unfolds, it just goes to show that it doesn't matter. But we have our first, sort of like our first, you know, idea when we see somebody, there's that immediate thing that pops up. You know?
Right, right. Never does a book by its cover.
That's right. Exactly.
I'd say it's a valuable lesson to learn there. That's for sure, man. It's just life. If you allow life to do so, life will amaze you on a regular basis. And that's why, since I had that experience that I shared with you guys, I don't look at life the same way anymore. And I see that there's so much more that we have to offer one another that, you know, if we really seriously want to do it, you know, the task is so overwhelming. If you think about trying to make this world a better place, it's so overwhelming that some people would be willing just to, you know, throw in the towel and say, you know, it's just too hard. I can't do it, you know. But thank God that there are people out there in this world that they don't give up. And even in the worst of times, figure out a way to, you know, make lemonade out of when life gives you lemons kind of deal, you know. We've all been down the road that we've seen some, you know, pretty bad things that, you know, we're trying to steer people away from or do something positive to make their experience better than what it has been. And I can't even tell you how many times there was some stranger that came up out of nowhere in my worst time of need that, you know, had it not been for them, you know, who knows where I'd have been. Had it not been for Brian and his son Seth out there in Michigan, me and my wife could have been stranded there and could have ran out of money and not been able to make it back home or the rest of our journey, or even if you want to look at it in the sense that we were in the right place at the right time and met the right people for a purpose, we wouldn't have been able to meet our purpose. You know, that story I was talking about where we're driving through a storm and there was a state trooper that was out there trying to get people to slow down because they were getting ready to go into really terrible weather. And we were behind an individual that you could barely see their trailer lights, and they were towing a car behind an RV, and they were set up for a disaster. If somebody would have flew around, they wouldn't have seen them, they would have hit them. We turned on our flashers, and everybody behind us turned on their flashers, and everybody on that highway were driving responsibly. So starting from that state trooper, who I give the credit for because he was out there in the pouring rain to do what he did to try to save lives.
That's just it. That's the kind of stories I would love to hear. And you invited people to write in stories, okay, or come on the show and actually tell their story. Those are the kind of stories I want to hear.
Yep, me too.
I did not have to do that.
No,
he
didn't.
That was his job description, to put his life on the line, stand there, try to swirl around people and hit and kill it. He didn't have to do it, but he did. He was looking out for other people.
Yep.
That's the type of stories we need to tell. We need to get other people to come on the show and tell.
Well, folks, we're down to the wire, and I actually want to play a couple tunes on the way up out of here, so we're going to run a bit over, but as far as the outro of this deal, but I want to go around the table and give you guys the last say on the thing. It's been another amazing show. It's been another blessing, and I hope that you guys share these stories with people. I hope that you share this podcast, play them on your networks, or, you know, chop out the parts that you like and play little sections of it, whatever. Just share the message that we gave here today with everybody out there. And if you got a story that you feel that the world needs to hear, please write us an email, write us a letter, you know, type it in the chat room, join us on Skype, tell it live on air, or whatever. But go out there and find those people in the world that have a message for their brothers and sisters out there, the pieces of the puzzle that's missing. Bring it to the table, and let's make the big picture a reality. Let's literally take the power that was given to us and all the gifts that we were given. It's just so amazing and so abundant. And let's do what can be done, which is literally bring about a heaven on earth. We've already proven that we can create a hell on earth. As humanity, we've already proven that time and time again through all the wars and the craziness and the way that we treat one another. Now let's take it to the opposite side of the spectrum, and let's let all of our lights shine and make it right. So with that said, Barbara, you want to go first and put your last message out there for this show?
thank you. Oh, just thank you so much for Shaziz, for your just being here, and Ray also, and everybody else you have on here all have, you know, been guided, I really feel, to be, you know, sending the voices and what we all experience and the good things out into the world. And I just give thanks every day for my life and for being a part of this amazing time that we're all together experiencing. And yeah, I do believe that Creator, Great Spirit, is watching and waiting for us, that we are the hope to make this world the beauty, the peaceful and the beautiful place that originally was. It's there, it's waiting, it's possible. I totally believe in it. And and I also hope that everyone does check out the documents about, you know, the human, just human, one word, H-U-M-A-N, human. And I think it will really mean something very significantly to everyone. So I just wanted to say that, and thank you so much for inviting me on.
Thank you. And I am going to check that out. You know, it's just, this whole deal is just so overwhelming. This earth is just so, I wished I could just stand there and see what this place looked like on the very first day of creation.
I often think of that myself.
What about you, Raymond?
I'd just like to reinforce what you just said earlier. Please, folks, help us. Write in and tell us your story of something good somebody did. I mean, thank God. We want people to know, without a shadow of a doubt, there are more good people on this earth than there are bad. Just write it in. I don't care how silly it may sound to you, but you see somebody do something good for somebody else, write in. Show us.
Yeah,
if you can make a video of it, put it on YouTube. Let's start a whole new section of YouTube.
We'll share your links, your Facebook links, your YouTube links, your videos, your podcasts, whatever kind of good positive message you got to spread to the world. We'll help you be the one to get it out there. So that's what it's all about. You know, thanks again, Raymond and Barbara. And
certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying. Oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all. We can't go on pretending day by day that the moon somewhere we'll soon make a change. We all are part of God's great big family. And the truth, you know, love is all we need. We are the children. We are the ones who make a brighter day. So let's start giving. So we all must lend a helping hand. We are the world. We are the children. We are the one to make a brighter day. So let's start giving. Down and out.
dream. The dream is to bring brilliant minds from every nation together to solve the world's problems, one positive pebble at a time. It will be we, the people of the world, that bring about true change, peace, and love to all. Governments never solve any problem, only create them. Wars, starvation, sickness, oppression, financial slavery, death and destruction is what governments do best. When all the military might of nations is used to destroy other nations, the question has to be asked, why not use that military strength for good? Feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and so forth. True representation of truth, freedom, and justice comes from we the people, and it never came from slick-talking politicians that say whatever they have to get elected, and then regulate away your freedoms. There is no reason to have starving babies in the world of today. Yet, it goes on. There's no reason for wars and sickness, yet it continues. We as the people must stop feeding that beast that is eating humanity alive. We the people of all nations have the power to bring about a literal heaven on earth. You as an individual have more power than you can possibly imagine. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of the pen. The power of action, and most of all, the power of love. It is time to use this power to make our world a better place. We are the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers of our children, and of our children's children's future. Into the future and beyond, what we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. Let us, from every nation, come together and make that future a great
one. Woman! Man! Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you ma'am.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would
realize... Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant! Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh.
Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're back to the round table!
We dance when we're able. We do routines of all the scenes. We put work impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more stable. So many times we give and rise that our quiet hunting label. We're rock and mad in Camelot. We sing from the die of Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Always looking to seize the turtle and the knights of the round table.